place to be is living free. Living free in Tennessee.
Welcome to Living Free in Tennessee, where we talk about building the life you choose on your terms. Today is April 14th, and this is episode 1027 of Living Free in Tennessee. We're doing a later than usual broadcast. I did want to, if you're in the comments and you hear the audio and it sounds wonky, let me know. I'm trying a different mic today because this temporary computer that I'm using does not like to work with my podcast mic. So we'll see if this sound is better. If not, I'll go back to mic like I did last time. It was crackly on this mic for some reason. And I think the processing speed of this older computer was simply keeping up with mic. Anyway, last night, my bottle-fed ewe, whose name is Stormy, and we call her Little Sheep as a nickname, went into its dub-doubling. Okay. Well, we're gonna start the show over, and then people who are on the audio podcast, because I also don't have the ability to edit audio right now, they're gonna have to hear this twice. So we will just do this, and you're gonna tell me
better now on the audio, and we're gonna start over. Welcome to Living Free in Tennessee, where we talk about building the life you choose on your terms. Today is Monday, April 14th, 2025, and this is episode 1027 of Living Free in Tennessee. And for situational awareness, if you did not read the weekly mail, I do not have the capacity, or rather the ability or software, to edit audio at this hot minute because my computer with that software on it is at the repair shop. Haven't heard back from them, so I don't know how long it'll be. I do have an even older computer with the editing software on it, so if this goes on another day, I'm just going to try to get that computer to work well enough to get some of the past shows put together. But that means that this audio is going to be completely raw on the podcast, so we can get an audio podcast out today. I'm back after taking a week off to hang out with my nieces, which was amazing. It was actually not a terrible time for computer because I thought I had a week to get it done, but then the repair shop said it would take 2 days to give me an assessment. It has been 4 days. I'm going to go look at them tomorrow if I don't hear back from them today. That's just the way it is. I might just take my computer away if they're like too busy to look at it. So anyway, last night my bottle-fed ewe went into labor. Her name is Stormy, and she's also referred to as Little Sheep. So this was one of three born to one of our ewes last year, and she got rejected by her mom or ignored. And I'm not sure if it's because they kind of got separated on two sides of the electric fence that time, or if the mom was like, I'm not taking care of three. Our other ewe who birthed three did in fact raise all three. So what we ended up with was Little Sheep in my living room for a long time. And if you were at the Living Free in Tennessee Spring Workshop, she was the star of the show in her little stable under Taj Mahaler for the workshop. I was bottle feeding her there, and we had her there because Tactical was not at the workshop. He had to go somewhere else. And so like there was nobody to run back and forth and feed her, and there was no way I was going to end up, you know, back and forth in the pasture efficiently. So we just left her there to be fed twice a day, and she was great. Pack Rat wants to know if I'm rested from last night. Not at all, Pack Rat. I am looking forward to bedtime tonight. That's all I can say. So we went live from the pasture just to give people a view of what it's really like to be on a homestead. And it was, I think, at midnight or 1 a.m. And Pack Rat like hopped in and said hi, but we were still waiting for lamb number two to be born at that point. So anyway, it ended up being a problem that Little Sheep is little yesterday. So, and it also was a problem that she decided to go into labor in the middle of the night, and I'm glad we noticed, because it would have been a terrible, terrible experience if it had noticed she was in labor. So we're going to talk about that long night in the pasture, as well as tales from the prepper pantry, a shopping report, and Operation Independence. I did not do the frugality tip. I do have some in at this point, but if you want to send a frugality tip, email it to Nicole at livingfreeintennessee.com. I'm trying to keep this show a little on the short side. You can probably hear my voice is a little scratchy. This is because we were up pretty late last night. I didn't get to sleep till 4 a.m. and then got up at 7, I think. So I'm probably doing a little better than Tactical, who got up at 5 for the wellness check at that time. Before we jump into the show, though, I want to talk about our featured event, which is the Exit and Build Land Summit at Polyface Farm. This is the 5th Exit and Build Land Summit that's been put on by the Live Free Academy. I have a link in the description of the YouTube video as well as the show notes for this if you want to check it out. It's going to be a pretty cool event, and it's always great to you know, visit permaculture ground zero, the man who has been able to use ethical and organic growing practices, rotational grazing to steward his land and make money. Those two things can happen together, and Joel Salatin has done that. So I'm pretty excited to be speaking at the Exit and Build Land Summit at Polyface Farm. It's May 23rd and 24th, and that's in Swoop, Virginia. There is information at Exit and Build. I think it's exitandbuildlandsummit.com, but I have the direct link to the, they have it set up as a course on Live Free Academy just for processing. So if you click that link, you'll go straight there. I am not set up as an affiliate for them right now, so it's not really an affiliate link, so you don't need to just seek that link out. I did tell Rebecca to mention on the show, though, so y'all would know I'm going to be speaking there. I'm going to be talking about developing revenue streams on your homestead. So that's my topic, and I'm looking forward to, you know, being at Polyface Farm when I'm not also running a Hollow Roast booth, although they are serving Hollow Roast coffee at the Exit and Build Land Summit at Polyface because, of course, our coffee has been featured at their event for year after year after year, and that's continuing this year as well. I'm really looking forward to that trip and hope to see you there too. I also want to thank our two sponsors of today's show. First one is agoristaxadvice.com. And with tax day being tomorrow, I had to put him in today. You know, so Matthew Sersley works with you to analyze how your finances are flowing in and then suggests the best business structure for you to take advantage of the tax code, as well as various different tax write-offs that you can track, how to track them, any risks associated with them. So you keep more of your money in your pocket. And as you do your taxes, you're going to see how much of your money you don't keep in your pocket, which can be a pretty shocking number when you really think about it. Check out more at agoristaxadvice.com/LFTN. Our second sponsor of today's show is Discount Mylar Bags. Toby started this company as a side hustle when he was still working at Dollar General, sourcing things in bulk and passing on the savings to the Dollar General customers. And he's like, this is the only secret skill I had, as he got into more of a preparedness mindset. And the funny thing is that he didn't think he had anything to offer because he wasn't like a badass military guy who could defend everybody or a gardener or any of these other skills. And then he realized, well, actually, all these people are paying way too much for their storage, for food storage, as he got into understanding how that works. And that's how DiscountMylarBags.com was born. Since then, it's turned into his full-time job. And he actually, on our Facebook group, put a pretty cool video up just assessing. He took a course learning about AI, and he wanted to share some thoughts about that. I thought it was a great video. I will play that audio on the podcast at a future date. It's on a super good fit topic-wise for today's show, so it'll probably be next week. But you can shortcut all of that and go check it out if you join the Living Free in Tennessee Coffee Break group on Facebook. With that, it's time for our first segment of today's show, and that's Tales from the Prepper Pantry, where we talk about storing what you use and using what you store. And yes, Pack Rat, there's some echo because I'm using the mic on the actual computer, which is the only mic that works on this computer for audio recording, unfortunately. It's either a processing issue or the two USB ports are squiggly and the data is not passing through them. I might try some contact cleaner on those after the show just to see if that helps, because goodness knows when I'm going to even see my computer again. Although I'm probably going to see it tomorrow, because if I don't hear from them today, I'm going in there tomorrow and looking at them in the face. That's my plan. Anyway, today Ryan Steva came and put up the last wood panels in the Prepper Pantry, and Tactical, instead of being on this show to give his perspective on our wonderful, terrible livestock experience last night, he is replumbing the utilities. So we haven't had any water all day, which is great right after you spent a lot of time in a pasture getting gross with birthing a lamb. But anyway, I'm not complaining. I just had to make my sarcastic. And we were using the outhouse today. So we're just making sure the outhouses work in advance of the Living Free in Tennessee Spring Workshop. But so we're getting that all plumbed in. It's not going to be finalized, but he's going to have everything plumbed. So my house is working, I believe, and then shut off valves. And then I imagine he's going to stop for the day because he's exhausted and didn't get enough sleep last night. So I'm proud of that. I have put a lot of things back in there, but I couldn't really put everything back in there until this was done. And then we tap off of that to put the water to our outdoor kitchen, which we use at the spring workshop, which is in a week and a half. So I was like, you know, it would help me get things set up faster if I had that water set up, first of all. And secondly, I don't really want to be running hoses from all over the place. So I'm just happy to get that project done all the way. And it's been a long time in coming, but it's been worth it to slow my roll and just like concentrate on that one. Cause there are a lot of projects around here that need to be finished. But if you never finish anything, you always have this sort of state of flux around your projects. And then that turns into a type of disorder that becomes pretty unhealthy and leads to more time needed to maintain everything. So I just was like, okay, I got to choose one, like dartboard. Let's get that done first, because once everything's put all the way away in there, like it's not temporarily here and there and all over the, like I'm looking at stacks of boxes in my office right now in the studio that get to move out there. I'm looking at one in particular that can move out there today. And that then makes it so that finishing the projects here isn't like move all the stuff that's temporarily there, finish the project here. And that's been probably the biggest lesson was like, I did have to rip everything up at once, but we got to a point where it was stable. And then I needed to finish everything one at a time to make it actually work right. We are preparing workshop food from the pantry. So, you know, the beef we're serving and the lamb we're serving is from the pantry. And we try to do as much of that as possible as we do the meal plan, which is we're not really sure what the meal plan is every year. In fact, I'm supposed to make watercress soup, and there's no watercress at my watercress patch. So I'm going to go to my secondary patch, and if I discover it has watercress and mine doesn't, then I need to figure out how to craft a duck-proof area there in that creek so that's easier to get to. But I'll harvest from the other creek and then make watercress soup because I thought people would like to know how that tastes. And I've always had an abundance of watercress in April for the spring workshop. And this time, I don't know if it's because we had a colder winter and cold kind of kept lingering this spring, or if it's the ducks got into the creek. I'm kind of suspecting the latter, because at this point we should be catching up with what's supposed to grow. And the mint is growing fine there. So we can get fresh mint tea out of that creek, but not watercress. That tells me we have an issue. That tells me we have an issue right there. I did find some really good high-end cured meats, including lamb salami and some other stuff at a store for $18 per one. And I really liked it. And I was like, well, you know, I need to learn how to make this, because $18 per lamb salami is a bit ongoing, probably not where I'm going to put my money. But then I thought, you know, I can buy things wholesale. I wonder if they sell them wholesale, and they do. And then for your first order wholesale, you get 50% off. So I scored an entire giant box of different cured meats from different kinds of animals, not just lamb, for the year. And that was paid for out of my work, like out of the business budget. And we'll be serving those at the spring workshop as part of our charcuterie day. We'll add those. That's why I got them. And then if I want to buy one personally, I can buy it from the business, right? You see how that works. But it was about $5 per one. $5.50 per one versus $18 at the store. Usually it'd be closer to $10 per one, or $11. So, you know, like moving forward, that's what it will cost. But sometimes you just see a deal like that and you're like, you know, I do have a business federal ID. Speaking of keeping more of your money in your pocket, not for a tax reason. And I can buy in bulk and we will totally eat all those and or serve them at events or whatever, like it's for catering. And that's just one way how you're structured can impact how your budget is. So just throwing that one out there as an example of refilling the pantry, because I like to keep cured meats on hand. I like making cured meats. I haven't been investing as much time in making cured meats this year because I've been investing time in getting my Zone Zero actually finished, which is probably going to take me the rest of the year, but it's getting better. I have to admit, it's getting better, right? It's getting better all the time. Yeah. So it's all coming together, but I'm just not making as much cured meats because my priority is like get the meats in the freezer and cook from scratch, get the herbs dried and get whatever vegetables I can and canned or dried or freeze dried for the winter. And then from there, we go into more advanced things like, oh, do I want to make cured meats or cheeses? Or like I'm keeping up with the kefir sort of, but I actually kind of left it a bit long and then mom tasted it. And she was like, that was a bit tart. And then I let her taste a batch where I didn't let it go as long. She's like, oh no, that tastes good. That first one just sort of tasted like vinegar and I don't like vinegar. And I said, okay, I get you. Other than that, the egg preparation for the spring workshop is underway. Mama Sauce is in town, which means we're pre-cooking the foods we can pre-cook for the workshop. I need to have a meeting with Kiri about that too, make sure I don't double on what she's doing. But we are serving duck eggs at the spring workshop. And what we do is scramble them up and freeze them. And then that way they don't have to crack them all. So it saves some time in the morning. Plus, when you do a scramble with duck eggs, it's as long as you do it right, you don't end up knowing that they were frozen before. It's like the one thing you can do with them that works well. So that takes care of one breakfast. And I don't know if I'm going to get enough duck eggs to serve duck eggs the whole time. So I may end up sourcing some local eggs or buying eggs at the store. Not sure how we're going to handle that, but we have some fun breakfasts in the offing, including if we can reasonably feel like we can do hollandaise sauce, we'll do a eggs benedict type thing without the eggs benedict, without the poached eggs. So it'll be like scrambled eggs benedict. So scrambled eggs on an English muffin or not if you're keto, and then with the hollandaise sauce and some, you know, potatoes if you want them, or no potatoes if you're not eating potatoes, and you know how that goes, right? So a little piece of either country ham or breakfast sausage or Canadian bacon, whatever we can get up. Probably back Black Forest ham is what I can get my hands on here locally. So that's either happening, or if we don't do that breakfast, we have a backup breakfast. And it all depends on how confident we feel about making that much hollandaise sauce for people on a schedule, because it's a lot. But I think I have that one scheduled for the first breakfast, which is usually the least attended breakfast of the workshop, just to make it a little bit easier. So that's all happening. I did have one person pull out on their ticket who's not able to come. So I did throw the link to the spring workshop in the show notes if you want to grab that ticket. It's at livingfreeintennessee.com/spring-workshop-2025, or the link's in the show notes. Or you just go to the homepage and click on workshop and it's right there. You got to get that in though by Thursday this week, I would say Thursday, Friday this week, or I will cut it off anyway because I have my stuff done for the number of people we have. But if I know we're not having that one extra person, then I will cut what we're ending up preparing or heating. Like I'll keep their food in the freezer for a future event. Our next segment is the weekly shopping report from Joe. And Joe went to the Dollar Tree and they're finally out of the big non-carbonated monsters I was getting, but there were plenty of other choices. Stock levels throughout the store looked good. Sonia was able to get some craft items there lately. We also went to Hobby Lobby for some acrylic paint. We didn't walk around the whole store looking at other stock, but I didn't see any empty sections or anything else odd. Things may change with the tariffs though. They were normal busy with a short wait to check out. The online price of a 2x4x8 at Home Depot is $3.85. and Aldi was last. We found everything we wanted. Staple prices were bread, $1.39, eggs, $4.97, so that's still way up, whole milk, $2.92, heavy cream, $5.29, orange juice, $4.09, butter, $3.49, that's gone down a little bit, bacon, $3.99, potatoes, $4.39, sugar, $2.99, flour, $2.35, and 80% ground beef is $4.59 a pound. Untainted regular gasoline remains $3.59 a gallon. So out of all that, the other big change is that there's no longer a 2 dozen egg maximum at Aldi. So I think we're kind of cruising out of that, the great egg shortage of 2025. So that's good. But you should totally just buy your eggs locally, guys. Support your local farmer, and then you have a relationship there through hard times, which is very helpful. Next up, we have Operation Independence, where we talk about developing ongoing local revenue and avoiding a need to pay a guy. And all of that equals having more financial stability, which has been my weak point in my walk to freedom, is having enough financial stability so that my GAF about what's going on goes lower and lower. Like, the more financially stable you are, the more you know, okay, I have what I need if I have to pivot. And if I have to pivot in a really, like, scary way by, like, just leaving my homestead or whatever. We had two lambs born, and that's about $800 that goes into the independence fund. If we choose to eat those lambs or resell them, that money then goes to offset, you know, it goes as farm income. But that's, you know, as long as they don't pass away between now and when it's time to make them just, you know, go somewhere, freezer camp or somebody else's homestead, that's pretty cool to have. So I can't complain about that at all, even though I'm a little sleepy today. Speaking of which, that brings us to the main topic of today's show, which is a wonderful, horrible livestock experience. And I started out the day just like, I woke up at 7, which is a little later than I usually wake up. And I hadn't heard the four-wheeler go, and tactical was assigned to the 5 a.m. check. And I was like, uh-oh, he may have slept through that. And he kind of indicated he might sleep through it. And so then I just, I queued up on Zella to let him know that Chestnut was going out. And then I walked out in the living room. Mom was already up. And she was like, I was trying to be really quiet because I knew you needed some sleep. And I was like, yeah, that was kind of a late night last night. But I went over, and on the way out, Tactical stopped me and told me what he had observed at 5, which meant he was up already. And he'd already been up and over at 5 a.m. So that dude probably really wants to go to bed right now. That's all I'm thinking. So it was a tired morning. And this kind of makes me think of, you know, whenever you go into homesteading, you have this vision of how it will be, and then you discover how it really is. And those are two very different things. And here at Living Free in Tennessee, I like to do my best to share with you what it's really, really like, which is why at about 1:30 in the morning, we went live from the pasture last time. I was very surprised, Pack Rat, that you were up. I didn't expect anybody to like bomb in on that show. And then I was like, well, somebody's there, but I don't have my glasses with me because I knew I'd lose them in the pasture. So Tactical, who is that? There's that moment on there. And it was dark. So it's like, here's a dark video from the pasture. But Tactical had a flashlight, so that kind of made it cool. Anyway, it's that meme, you know, that get sheep, they said. It will be easy, they said. Then you'll never have to run out of meat from grass, they said. So I did. And I scored a genetically strong flock of St. Croix from Dawn, our friend Dawn Sutton, who you've seen her at Self-Reliance Festival probably most often, and you see her in the networks, right? And we made it through that first year of awful drought. So the sheep, her sheep arrived here, and then it proceeded not to rain for months, like 4 or 5 months, which is pretty unusual for a summer in Tennessee. And we ended up having to buy hay and feed hay at the time of year when you're grass feeding them. So it was not, in fact, cheaper. It cost more because I had to source organic hay at a weird year when people's grass wasn't growing. And I was very lucky I had enough contacts to do that, right? And we were definitely, like, we were supplementing with hay, but we were for sure feeding hay August through October, when we would usually not even start hay till November or December. And then it rained and we grew a little grass and they ate that. And then that was it. I learned how to handle bloat. I learned how to process them, which I'd process pigs, but you know, I learned about how to deal with a ramming McRam face. He became Leg of Henry. We served Leg of Henry at the workshop by that name because he was such a jerk. By the time he went to the processor, because I also learned that sending sheep to the processor, like if you process your own, it's a lot of work and you don't have to spend as much money. But sending him to the processor, really, really convenient, especially when you have like 10 or 12 to do, like we're going to do in October. So that was a lot of learning. I learned about sudden losses. Like you always lose the one you like the most. And sudden losses that you cannot do anything about and you can't control for them. Like if there's a pathogen or a virus in the woods where they're grazing, which happened to one of ours, and it's something that you can't treat, then that's it. It's done, right? So that was hard. I also learned how they can regenerate the land. So the good thing about how my property was when they got here, there was a lot of undergrowth and brush and they will eat that. And that's the only thing that really got us through that drought was that it was so overgrown. So it wasn't like I had finely mowed lawns or something I was putting them on. No, it was like privet and wild rose and all this other stuff. And we were also, we had access beyond my 3 acres to another 2 acres that we own here. And then my neighbor's 16 acres, which was also very overgrown. So that was year one. Last year, I pulled my first lambs from a ewe who had stalled out in birth. And the reason she had is her cervix was not dilating enough for the head, to get out. And this, I think this happened to her because this, you'll hear this story more than one time, because the ram got through the fence and impregnated her sooner than I wanted her to be pregnant. And when I pulled those lambs, they were stillborn. And that was super sad for her. Like she's pregnant. She's like, there's an instinct they have. Like she was horribly upset. She actually was pretty mad at us for months after that because we caught her, held her down, pulled her lambs out, and they were stillborn. And I wasn't sure if we were going to have to process her. And she was the first baby born on my property. She's a great mom now. She had babies this year, but that was the horrible in the horrible, terrible livestock experience. And my first experience in pulling, I didn't have like they have books and you read about it and whatever, you see pictures, but until you've done it, you don't like know. And you're going in there to pull a lamb, having never pulled a lamb before, no guidance from a veterinarian, because finding a veterinarian who can come to your pasture at 5 a.m. on no warning is not a super easy thing to do, particularly where I am. And then I don't have a big enough flock where I have like an in-house veterinarian or somebody on retainer, or I don't even know what you do in that situation. What you do is you learn how to do things that we tend to rely on veterinarians for. That's what you do, in my opinion. And I'm totally going to sneeze. Maybe I won't. Okay, so we've been a bottle baby, and Stormy was the rejected triplet I talked about earlier in the show, she's very friendly. And part of what we've wanted Stormy to do is help smooth out some of the skittishness from the flock by having one of the sheep interact with us. And that's worked really well. Like the ewes really like tactical. They will eat from my hand, and they wouldn't when they moved in. And some of that you just get them to do by being around them. But when they saw Stormy interacting with us, they were, it's kind of like they see one you doing it, so they're a little bit more willing to make that forward effort. And then we've been really careful about not just like grabbing them and forcing ourselves on them. It's like, okay, you can smell me and I didn't touch you. See, it wasn't scary. But little sheep is little. And she was not supposed to get pregnant yet. And in fact, I wasn't sure if I was ever going to do that, because really her role was to be cute and friendly with us. And we kind of like have an affection for her that's deeper than the others, because we raised her from like day one, right? So when the ram came over to do ram things, in last November, she jumped the fence and Ram did Ram things. And I didn't see the Ram do Ram things, but it was pretty clear by December that she might be pregnant. And I was like, well, fiddlesticks. I was hoping that she had just not been in heat when that happened, but here we are. And as an aside, if you're going to separate boys from girls in paddocks, do not have them right next to each other with a couple of electric wires, because at some point the drive overrides the fear of the wire. I keep them a tenth of a mile apart now. That's what we've come to, and it's been a long time in coming. So we kind of had this situation happen twice. And so now it's like all the boys are here and all the girls are there, because if we let the boys over there, we'll have a second round of pregnancies and we'll have births in whatever 5 months from now, April, May, June, July, August, September. And then we can get them pregnant again in November. But the way that I've wanted to manage this flock, because we're rehabilitating a pasture with them, which means it's not optimal pasture, but it's a lot better than it was. I'll be talking about that at the Living Free in Tennessee Spring Workshop too, like how the pastures change and how we've done that with sheep. It's not optimal. And so then I don't want to nutritionally tax them. So I'm thinking once a year. It's a lot to like be pregnant and raise a lamb, and then if your pasture isn't as good, then I need to supplement. And our whole goal is to have grass-fed, regeneratively raised meat. So to me, that meant less production on purpose, right? Than the maximum production I can have. So now we learned this year that a 3.5-month-old ram can get a bunch of sheep pregnant, because we had a lot of births in the middle of the winter when we didn't want them. And I would like looked back at when we separated and I'm like, yep, 3.5 months old. I'm pretty sure it was this one who was a single birth to a mom. So just like outgrew everybody else. He's a great ram. He's still here. But he's here with all the little boys that he made and that were born this winter. that's where we're at right now. So we were pretty attached to Stormy, and we liked to call her little sheep, and we had her ultrasounded, which is not something I would usually do. I would usually be like, eh, they're pregnant. They'll give birth when they do. Like, an ultrasound's not going to help me. The only way that would help me is if I was going to breed anybody who wasn't bred, and we're not doing that. And also, we can put her in a car and drive her somewhere, because she's so friendly that's not a problem. So we drove her to the vet. And vet's farm, and the vet ultrasounded her, and she saw two lambs in there, and she's like, they're going to be due in about April based on what I'm seeing here. So let's fast forward to yesterday afternoon. First of all, Sunday, the other pregnant ewe gave birth. That's a story you'll hear on Friday's Homestead Happening show, because it's a whole nother like terrible, wonderful experience. We were in the window for birth. I was like, Murphy's Law of my spring workshop is that I'm going to be pulling lambs. It's going to be one of those births where I have to pull lambs, and it's going to be during the spring workshop when I'm supposed to be presenting, but whatever. That's just what makes the spring workshop the spring workshop. You are on a homestead, and homestead things happen here. And I looked at her, like I went up the hill and looked at her, and she was swollen, which is a sign that labor is imminent. And so I was like, okay, I don't remember if it means same day or same week. So I looked it up and it said it could be 6 hours. It could be up to 3 days. And so last night after dinner, we were tired. We had been doing a lot of setup for the spring workshop. And I was like, okay, it's the end of the day. We're going to eat dinner. We're going to like totally turn off our brains and watch a TV show. And I'm not going to talk about what we're doing tomorrow, even though I'm thinking about it, because I don't want to stress everybody out, right? So I looked at Tactical and I'm like, well, based on what I'm looking at here, little sheep was 6 hours away from labor or 3 days away when I saw her. And this is why. And Tactical goes, yeah. You know, I was thinking of checking on her one more time tonight after we saw her today, just to be safe. And understand that our pasture is super steep. It's a big hill, and they are at almost the tippy top pasture. They're They're not quite as far away as they could be, but they're pretty far away. And I almost was like, let's just bring her down to the barn so that it's easier to check on her, right? Well, I was like, I approve of this. And then I'm not going to go up there with you because I'm super freaked out about going up steep hills. And then if you add the fact that I can't see the steep hill, I'm a little bit more like nervous about being on a four-wheeler on a really steep hill, right? So he decided to check on in on her around 11 o'clock. And I was already in bed by 9-ish or, you know, 9 or 10. I was reading a book and kind of just like dozing off. And my phone, my book's on my phone right now because I left my Kindle at Jack's. But I would have had my phone with me anyway, knowing he was checking on her. And the Zello app pipes up with, all it says is, Stormy's in labor. That's it. And I was like, crap. I was like so tired too. And I like dragged my butt up and went out to the couch with my pillow and a blanket. And I sat there and I was like, okay, so what's going on? And he said, well, there's, you know, the water bags hanging out. He sent me a picture of that and he explained the whole thing. And understand that we're down one four-wheeler right now. So there's only one four-wheeler that's working in the holler out of all of them between all the neighbors. We're actually down two four-wheelers because Nighthawks is torn apart too. And I was like, I'm going to have to. So when I ride up a hill on the four-wheeler in control, it's better psychologically for me than riding. I'm going to have to ride up on the back of the two-wheel drive four-wheeler to the steepest part of the pasture because that's where she is if I go up there. But, I mean, hopefully the birth will just go well, right? And I won't have to worry about it. So I'm trying to, I'm like, so how's it going? And I'm in my PJs, like, totally tucked in for the night. And he's like, well, this is the picture. And I said, okay. He's like, how long is it going to be? And I said, could be up to half an hour before the baby comes out. And honestly, if that baby just comes out easily, it's going to come out easily whether we're there or not. And at a half hour, that's when you're supposed to start like doing pelvic exams and checking to see what, you know, if there's a problem, if there's a breech one or whatever. He's like, okay, well, I'm going to come back down the hill and get warmer clothes. So I was like, okay. And I sat on the couch and I'm thinking like, should I go up there? Should I just let him assess it and get me up there? If it turns into an emergency, what should I do? So he comes into the house and he's sitting there. I'm still in my PJs under the blanket on the couch, like laying there, like, I don't want to get up. And we talked about it and we talked about it, you know, like maybe 2 minutes. And I'm like, I said, I just admitted, I'm like, here's the deal. I'm really freaked out about riding up that four wheeler in the dark. And he goes, why? And I said, because I can't see. So it's worse when I can't see. And he was like, okay. He's like, well, I'm going to go get my warmer clothes on. And I was like, okay, I have to take my own homesteader advice and be fearless right now. Because if there is a problem, two people is better than one. And if there is a problem, I tend to be the one who's more confident about medical things. And I am the only one of the two of us, if we end up needing to pull the lamb, who's ever pulled a lamb. So I know he would be willing to try to pull the lamb, but he's never pulled a lamb. And I, while it was stillborn last year, I had at least, you know, been around the inside of a ewe and had an idea of what the anatomy was. So the second thing that was freaking me out is that my right hand hasn't been working. I am like literally using my mouse with my left hand because of a carpal tunnel flare up. And I haven't had carpal tunnel problems up until now, except for a brief period of time in my 20s. So it was just sort of out of nowhere, but I used a reciprocal saw too much. It flared it up and it's all the way up into my neck. And the strength of my grip isn't great. And so hanging on to the four-wheeler is a whole other thing. Plus, if I'm going to pull a lamb, which hand am I most confident with? Oh, the one that's not working right. So I was like, this is terrible. This is like the worst time for this to happen. It's the middle of the night and my hand's not working right. And I got to go up the hill and face my demons, you know. And I was like, Nicole, put your big girl pants on. And I did, literally. And I also put overalls on and I just was like layers, and it's cold out there probably. So I put my fuzzy hat that Trish made us and also my CrossFit Garage hoodie just in case it was super cold. I'm like, 'cause I'm about to go out there and I don't know if I'm going to be there for half an hour or 5 hours right now. I don't even know what's going to happen. And then I remembered rule number one, if you are a woman on a homestead, especially if you're putting overalls on, pee. Go pee before you leave because you don't know how long you're going to be in the pasture. And yes, you can undress in the pasture and pee, but it's very inconvenient. And of course, it was after dark last night, so I wasn't worried about people seeing me in the large, wide open pasture, but I was like, I'm not going to want to, you know, have to deal with that. So even in an emergency, although that was not the emergency of the former that we had earlier that week, you pee before you go up there, or you go up there and you're holding it, or you finally just have to fess up and go behind a, you know, a blade of grass or something. So I suited up, and then I thought, before I go up there, what do I think I'll need if we have problems? This is where I tell Chuck Peoples of Homestead Medical, we're really eager for that sheep kit. So I'm about to make one this weekend. So I'll email you what I put in it. I'm going to want Vaseline. And mom had, I was like, oh man, if I have to pull a sheep, I need a lube. Because we were just talking about birth. And mom's like, well, Vaseline works for that. And you have Vaseline. And I'm like, I do. I didn't even know I had Vaseline. I don't even know how old the Vaseline is. And I open the hall closet. Sure enough, there's Vaseline in my like little bin of extra things. And I grab that and I grab the super long gloves and just in case. And then I, instead of just two gloves, like I usually just bring two, I brought the whole box just in case. Because I'm thinking like it's way up the hill. Every time I need something else, he's going down the hill and up the hill and down the hill. And it's like 10 minutes back to my house. It's a 20-minute break every time he does that pretty much. And I went up there and I brought a lantern because I knew it was dark. So we got there about 11:45 and there had been no progress. I wasn't seeing active labor. And so, but she was starting to paw the ground, which is a sign that they're in pain, and she was up and she was down. So there was like that, but you weren't really seeing any rippling or anything. And it wasn't like she was pushing. And then she did. And, two little feet came out, and I'm like, I don't see a nose. I want to see a nose. I want them to come out like this with their little nose, right? No nose. Like, that better not be the back feet. I'm going to, like, have a coronary, because what you're supposed to do is go in there, turn the lamb, and then let it come out forward, although I believe you can get them out backwards, but that's, like, really bad, and she's tiny. Little sheep is a little sheep. So I started seeing signs of active labor. And it wasn't progressing the way I would expect it to. And a year ago when I pulled the lamb stillborn, I think had I gone in sooner, which would have been hard to do because we had to catch her, I think we might have saved those lambs too. And so I decided she started labor at 11. It's close to midnight now. I'm going to, on her next active contraction, just go up in there and feel and see if I can help her get it out. And its little feet were just hanging out by this point. So in her, and so he got a hold of her head when she was in active labor, and she ended up laying down during this. And I went up in there and she did not like that at all. Like, it was clear that that hurt her. And then they were talking about a lamb I really like. So I'm like trying not to cry because I don't want to hurt little sheep. But also I assessed what we had was a stuck lamb and its feet were out, but she was not dilated enough for it to go over its head is what was happening. So its head was like, it ended up with all of its legs out and its head was just stuck. And I was at least, had a lot of lubrication on my gloves. And I was up in there with one hand and he was keeping her. So I was having to pull. So I was unable to pull it. At one point I pulled and heard a snap and thought I broke a leg of the lamb. And I'm like, great. And I think the lamb is dead. And this is like, I was like super sad about the whole situation and I wanted to give up. But you got to be fearless if you're a homesteader. And sometimes you have to do things that are uncomfortable. And I just thought, like, in the grand scheme of things, I can't, there's no vet I can call right now to ask. Because what I really wanted to do was have somebody tell me, just keep pulling. That's the only thing you can do. Or there's this other thing you can do. Or I'll be there in 15 minutes, right? But I was like, man, here's where we're at. I can leave this lamb half out of her stock until 8 a.m. and it's 8 hours from now, and she'll probably die because of sepsis at that point. Or, you know, like the chance of infection is higher. Or I'm pulling this lamb and there's a chance that little sheep will live. And it's also possible that when I pull this lamb, I'm going to tear her so badly that she's going to bleed out or die. And I'm like, and I think the lamb is dead because it wasn't moving at all. And so she went through another contraction. Tactical was keeping her from being pulled down the hill as I'm pulling the lamb. The arms are all the way out at this point. The head is stuck. And I managed to get my hand up around the head. And I just pulled. And then with my other hand, so it was just one hand, right? With my other hand, I sort of peeled back to get the lip of her, of the exit out of my way. And then it came out. And it moved. And I was like, ah, I think it's alive. And so then I did. So what a mom will do is sort of like nose it and lick it and paw it. So I did that. And I had a towel with me. And so I dried it off a little bit. And it was definitely moving. And then Stormy noticed that there was a lamb and she started taking care of it like a mother would. So I backed off and just let her do that. But it could only stand up on its back legs and not its front legs. And I was like, yeah, I think I broke the legs. So I mean, it's like, then we're going to have to decide, do we split the legs and just whatever, or is it going to be a cull? And then that's going to be super sad for Stormy. And I was like, well, I can't tell if I broke the legs and, you know, and we don't want to touch it or get in the way of the bonding as much as possible. So, I was just shocked that lamb was alive. And then Stormy wasn't visually bleeding out. Like she was, if there wasn't a bunch of blood coming out, she was just like normal amount of birthing material. And, she was instantly like, that's mine. I'm bonded to it. Like, this is awesome for me. Like she was total, it was not a bonding. There was no bonding challenge. Like sometimes new mothers have a hard time figuring out what in the world's going on. But, you know, she was pawing at it, trying to get it to stand up, and it would try, and then it wouldn't work, and it was very weak. And then it took about a half hour, it finally was able to stand up, and it stood up on its front legs. I had not broken its front legs. I don't know what the popping noise is that I heard. It could have been something with its mouth or its head. I've actually since spoken to a veterinarian who told me, as long as the umbilical cord's there, you can do whatever you need to the head, and it's going to be fine as long as you don't break the neck. Because of course with the broken neck, it's not going to do anything later. And, yeah, so it stood up and that was about when we went live from the pasture. And I'm like, okay, we're past the agonizing, will it stand up phase? And now we're going to watch it look for a tit for the next, however long until it figures that out. And it's always anybody who's seen a lamb born, like, it's not like they just know what to do and it's right there and they're on it. They're like, they're licking their mom's face and her foot and her tail. And they're like, I know there's something here I should be doing, but I don't know where it is. And then they get near and then they like fall through and go out the back. And that went on for another 45 minutes. And by this point it was, you know, let's step back and paint the scene. And this is the wonderful, Pack Rat says cartilage, maybe. The wonderful part of this is that last night was warmish, pleasant, dry, not raining, not a lot of wind, and a full moon. So while I had a lantern up there, I didn't have it on the whole time. I could basically see what was going on in the full moon, and there was no reason to just keep that light on the whole time. And it's like at the top of the pasture is a beautiful view. So we're sitting out here peaceful. A baby's just been born. Holy cow, it's still alive. I didn't kill little sheep yet. And, you know, all I have is a little ewe lamb not nursing. And so the little ewe lamb didn't nurse. And finally, I'm like, okay, it's been over an hour. It was before that. So first Tactical went down and got tea. And we're having like hot tea in the pasture, watching this go down. And I was like, okay, go down and get the colostrum replacer and make some, and we're going to make sure she gets colostrum in her because her body temperature seemed okay to me. But I didn't have a thermometer with me. I should have had that. So I'm like, go get it. And then while you're there, you probably need to put gas in the four-wheeler because you've been up and down the pasture like 90 times today. He's like, yeah, that's a good point. I was going to say next time I'm down, I need to put gas in there. So he goes down the hill and he got to my house. And the minute he got there, she finally latched on and had like legitimate, I witnessed it, got milk, or actually got colostrum. And so I keyed up and I'm like, I don't need the colostrum replacer anymore. She's on the tit, like it's all good. And so then he gassed up and came back. And then it was 1:30 a.m. And understand that she went into labor around 11. I pulled the lamb at midnight. 1:30 in the morning, there's still no second lamb. And we had an ultrasound that said there was a second lamb. And little sheep didn't look like she was in labor. She was grazing. But also there had been no colostrum. I'm not colostrum. The placenta had not passed. So we're just sitting there and, you know, watching this little ewe lamb not find the tit a lot. And then every so often close the deal and like get colostrum. And I just looked at him and I was like, you know, if I didn't know there was a second one in there, I would be going back home right now and letting these guys just bond and not worrying about it really. And just, you know, I'd be worried about, did the lamb make it through the night and get up early and come over and see it. But I know there's a second one in there because we got an ultrasound. And so he was like, yeah. So at 2 a.m., after a lot of deliberation and, you know, more reading up on you, because usually it's within 45 minutes the second one comes out. I'm like, we may have a stuck labor. And my choices with a stuck labor are wait until I can go to a vet to take care of it, which would be at 8 o'clock in the morning. Or I do a pelvic exam and I pull the dead lamb. And I've done that once before with last year. And I was like, I just like, as traumatic as that was to little sheep, I'm really afraid that a second one coming out is going to be the thing that puts us over the edge with her. And I can't imagine she wants me doing a pelvic exam right now after all that trauma to the area. And especially as hard as I had to pull to get that one out, I was like, I mean, is it possible she had one before? But she was pretty clean when she started. So I was like, I don't think she had one before. And then we were seeing her second lamb. So after a lot of deliberation, we decided I needed to do the pelvic exam. And I said, I would rather do this in the barn. And I think we need to take them to the barn for the night and probably another day while this little one who's not as vibrant as I'd like gets just a little bit more access to mom's milk, and we make sure they're really well bonded. Plus we already have another mom and lamb in there for a similar reason. So we're going to have to bring them all, you know, like we can bring her down. And then if we have the vet there in the morning, she's down the hill and we don't have to go up there and get her and bring her down the hill for the vet. Cause we were at this point, not entirely sure we weren't going to have a veterinarian out in the morning anyway. So I kidnapped the ewe lamb. And I'm pretty sure I haven't been forgiven yet for this. I kidnapped the ewe lamb and used the mother's drive to get her under the fence. And Tactical had to like push her under it because she's freaked out about getting shocked by the fence. But we had the fence up. And then she kept wanting to go back up the hill where she thought her lamb was. And I was like, no, it's right here. And it would bat. And then she'd come running and smell it and be like, okay, there it is. And then she'd be like, why aren't you putting it down? You're supposed to let me bond with mine. So she was pretty upset with this whole situation. And what happened is we had to walk all the way down the pasture because I didn't want to stress her out. And like, we're not going to put her on the four-wheeler in this situation, right? Because she will ride the four-wheeler, as a matter of fact. So we're walking down this really steep hill, and every time the little lamb bad, she'd run to me and then she'd turn around and look for it again if I walked away, because she kept thinking it was up the hill. And she just wasn't understanding what we were doing here. And it was like crazy. So we're walking along and I get to this one place and I'm like, okay, this is the steepest, slipperiest part. I need to not fall with this lamb in my hands right here. I want to squish the lamb. And Tactical has his hands on Stormy. And he just drops because he totally lost footing. He goes, you mean like that? And I was like, yeah, I'm glad that was you and not me, because, you know, that's fine. So towards the end, Stormy kind of figured out what we were doing with her lamb. I also learned that if I bad like a little lamb, that she thought it was her little ewe lamb. And she would come running, and then I'd let her smell it. And so we kind of developed this process of how often to let her smell it. And then when we got near the barn, she knew what she was like, oh, we're going to the barn. She ran straight in the barn. And then I put her lamb down. And she was pretty pissed off at us, but she was there. So we were in the barn, and then Tactical left me in the barn with the barn doors closed and walked all the way back up the hill. And then came all the way back down with the four-wheeler with all the supplies we needed for the pelvic exam. And that took another while because he had to walk. Like, it's not so bad walking down the hill, but walking up the hill, like, it's really steep. And then, you know, he'd already just walked down the hill. Anyway, it took a while. And so I did the exam, and the way we did that is he just held her head, and I used about a half jar of Vaseline because I was like, I want to do as little risk of any damage as possible. And I went in to feel for the other lamb, and you go up to about, I was up to about my elbow, which is kind of amazing when you look at the size of a, you're like, wow, there's a lot of space in there for me to do this. And I didn't feel another lamb. So I carefully edged back out, and by 3 a.m. we were back here and we could go to bed, and he agreed to take the 5 o'clock check. I was like, so it's 3 a.m. in about 2 hours, we should check and just see if there's any sign of a second lamb that I don't know, what if I missed it, right? See if there's a sign of a second lamb, or if she's got an infection or some bleeding, make sure the lamb is okay and that the lamb is getting enough colostrum. And then I took the 7 o'clock inspection time, which I did it a little late at 7:30, to be honest. But it was, you know, I don't think either one of us fell asleep. You know, like, he went down to the cabin. I think he slept in his chair so he'd wake up. I didn't get to sleep till 4 o'clock because there was too much going on, but I was exhausted. And then I didn't hear him go over to check, but when he went over there, he found the placenta on the floor of the barn. And that means that the delivery was over, and there was indeed not a second lamb, even though the ultrasound had showed us a second lamb. So that was wrong. And, like, literally would have just left her up the hill after that, or taken her to the barn and left her at the barn after that, had I not, quote unquote, known there was a second lamb, because it was like, she looked perfectly fine. She was grazing. She was bonding with her baby. She was letting it nurse. Like, it all looked good. And this is where you run into a lot of things with sheep, right? Or with any livestock. So according to the forums, what I should have done was shot her full of antibiotics because I had exposed her to infection by pulling the lamb, and possibly tears, which there's probably some tears in there I just don't know about. Like, she's not bleeding, but, you know, who knows? And if you talk to my veterinarian, she's like, no, unless there's a fever, you don't, like, their bodies are designed to deal with that. And you don't want to use antibiotics unless you really had to use them for whatever reason. And so I already knew that. Really, I had a talk with the veterinarian. I was like, I want to make sure I've done everything I should do because I've only ever pulled stillborn. And this is where we're at. And she was like, yeah, that's all you can do. Watch her for infection. As long as there's not bleeding, she'll be fine. And the lamb will either be fine or not be fine, depending on how it is genetically. And that was, you know, that was what you should do. So what I learned is that you definitely want to go in and do the pelvic exam and pull the sheep sooner rather than later. The other thing I did know, because I had talked to the veterinarian before, is during active labor, when you pull a sheep, you're less likely to tear than if there's no progress at all, right? If it's not actually in labor. So just like reaching in there and grabbing it out when they're not in labor, it can really cause some problems. So that's why I was waiting for active contractions to pull on that one. But this is how it really is, guys. Like, I'm tired. I don't have water to my house, but I might now, I don't know. Like, I've been hearing noises going on in there, plumbing related. You have terrible things happen if you have livestock. You'll get a stuck lamb, for example. And all the fear of past bad outcomes will be right there in your head when that happens. And there's no way to really know if what you're doing is the right thing. And then if things don't go right, you wonder if you could have done something different, if it will be right. But you have to do something. You have to be fearless if you're going to have livestock and be a homesteader. And, you know, that's the big lesson for me. Like, this is how it really is. Sometimes you just have to, like, I didn't want to pull a lamb last night in the middle of the night. I didn't want to potentially kill one of my favorite sheep in the flock. And I certainly didn't want a stillborn lamb, because that's always sad too. But, and I didn't want it to like be stillborn because I killed it on the way out because I pulled it. But I also knew it wasn't right. I could tell things weren't right. And that's what I mean by, like, you have to be fearless. And it was a terrible thing to have to face in the middle of the night. And it could have had, if we hadn't been there though, it would have been more terrible. So really it was wonderful that we were able to be there to take care of the situation. And, you know, online we see all these beautiful homesteads where nothing goes wrong. And we see the ones where everything's drama all the time. And I really think the truth is somewhere in the middle of those two extremes, right? We had a warmish, beautiful night with a full moon and a beautiful view, and I was able to help a stuck lamb, and everybody's alive right now. And, you know, baby lambs are pretty darn cute. So that's actually, it was a wonderful experience, even though it was a terrible situation. Sometimes what's terrible turns into the beautiful baby ram that we have now. And yeah, I've been calling it a baby ewe the whole time, because in the dark, I misgendered the ram that was born. Dude looks like a lady. And today I took a closer look and I was like, oh, yeah, it's a boy. So we do have one girl and one boy born this week. And that's the last of our birthing season, just in time for the Living Free in Tennessee podcast. So, you know, even the terrible things can be wonderful on the homestead. And if you're going to have livestock, just remember you got to be fearless, because if I had not been willing to help in that situation, it would have been a much worse outcome for both the baby and the mother. And, you know, we learn about medical preparedness for when doctors aren't there. Well, what about when veterinarians aren't there? This shouldn't keep you from having livestock, but boy, if you can find a mentor, it's really super helpful. Anyway, if you like and want to support the work I'm doing here, you can do it in two ways. One, get your coffee at hollerroast.com. Two, consider becoming a member. Head over to livingfreeintennessee.com to find out more about that. And ooh, I just see the video for the first time. It's really dark in here. That's this new old computer. Hopefully we'll have the studio back by the end of the week. With that, guys, go out. Make it a great week.